This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Beth Trejo.
Even just adding an emoji in your copy at times can definitely like go a long ways, or you know, can add some like tongue-in-cheek humor, or it's the simple things that I think people overlook because they're trying to be so complicated or complex.
Beth is the leader, mentor, torchbearer, innovator, founder, and CEO of Chatterkick. As a trailblazing entrepreneur, Beth loves to take risks, and starting Chatterkick in 2012 was her biggest one yet. Defying the odds of successful female-founded startups, Beth not only prevailed, she grew her company with a predominantly female staff. Beth started her social media agency with a lot of goals in mind, like redefining how businesses connect with people and providing a human connection in the digital world. But she also had a deliberate goal to advance the role of women in the tech industry and enhance the potential of Siouxland women in order to create real change in the community. Beth locally mentors women and nonprofits because she believes that high tech offers a fulfilling and unique career, and she launched a podcast in order to connect female leaders across the state of Iowa. She incorporates her passion for the digital landscape and social media into nearly every role she is known, from her craft as an entrepreneur and local business advocate to her calling as a wife and mom of two tech-savvy kids. She is kind, she is generous, and she is a force. And she is also our guest this week. Beth, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to have a conversation today.
I am excited to have that conversation as well. And one thing that your bio touches on literally is that point of conversation, that human connection in the digital world. And I think that seems like it is I don't even know if you could call it the second or third problem that brands have to solve in this new digital landscape that we find ourselves in, because I think we spend so much time almost over-indexing on the what's different on the digital side of things that we then sort of get surprised by this other challenge that we have in that, despite all of these tools, it's still a very human world and a world that very much needs that human connection.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, we work with all sizes of businesses from large to small, and it always feels like, you know, everybody's reaching for the thing that they don't have, or they want to be, you know, big brands want to figure out how to localize, and then local businesses are trying to, you know, how to compete with the big guys. And so, it's just interesting to see the evolution of how we're connecting and really communicating, with each other, both in a business sense. And I mean, even personally, you know, from young people to old people, it's really interesting to see the change and how things are changing.
Well, it's interesting. And you mentioned everybody kind of wants what they don't have. And in working with different sized organizations too, I do find myself saying, you know, though there's obvious resources challenges with smaller entities, when you're smaller, you can really, the time to have that impact or the distance between how can we connect in a more human way with our customers, it usually seems shorter in those smaller entities. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think for sure. And it's interesting because, you know, we manage a lot of social assets. And so we're fortunate that we kind of get to see behind the curtain of a lot of different businesses' incoming messages. And, you know, there's a lot of places where consumers and people can really connect with businesses. And it's really interesting to see how many people in those smaller entities or even just an earlier stage business use people's first names. Like, Janet, is this you? Or like, you know, the messages seem so friendly because they feel like they know the person, whether it really is, you know, the CEO answering all of the inbox messages. And honestly, sometimes it is. We see this a lot with even celebrity culture, right? Like, you feel like when you're direct messaging someone on Instagram that you're literally getting your message in the inbox of a celebrity. And that, you know, 10 years ago wasn't even an opportunity. So it's really fascinating to see on that local level how quickly people feel like, yep, this is Beth talking and I know how to reach Beth. I'll just, you know, direct message her or Facebook inbox message her. And social really provides that like intimate experience, I think, whether or not it's again the reality and maybe there's a PR team on the back end. Or it's you know, it really is the person that they're trying to connect with.
Well, and again, I am bringing this up only as an example of reinforcing what you just said, but I've even seen that in getting emails or messages, you know, someone wanting to reach out with a speaking opportunity, and someone says it to whoever is, you know, answers Nick's email, and I'm always a little taken aback because I do, spoiler alert, answer my own email. But it is this moment of surprise, this bit of unexpected delight that you can bring someone with that human connection. So I think that that's it's little touches like that that are easy to forget about, but can yield some big wins.
Yeah, and I think that's really one of the big reasons why people are kind of turning to the audio space. I mean, obviously, audio has always been a form of marketing and a form of communication. But I feel like even on social channels, I mean, we're taking like audio clips and putting them, you know, on a little image just because sometimes people want to be able to hear that person and they want that like feeling of connectiveness, and audio, you know, does it. You can't really fake someone saying something, especially and hear the authenticity in their voice or the passion or the emotion, and all of those components really lend to that medium really well. So, you know, we definitely see that trend in towards the audio. And I mean, everything is cyclical, right? And I really do think that people crave that human connection. Like, they want it, whether or not they say they do. But we see that across the board with all the different platforms and channels. The more that people feel like they have the behind the scenes, in the know, you know, kind of, I know this person, the better that they trust them. And if that kind of translates to the business sense, the more that they're probably going to buy from them. So it's definitely an opportunity there.
Well, talk more about that audio. You had mentioned some of the podcast work that you've done, but I think that a lot of times that podcasting exists in kind of this, you know, people see a lot of headlines about it, but I see a lot of businesses grappling with, okay, how would I make this work for our entity? How would this, how can this, to your last point exactly, align with the goals that we're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so I think that audio is really great for numerous things. But I think one thing that it works really well for, especially if you have kind of a technical or a complicated industry, or, you know, some people are just not good on camera. We do a lot of video shoots and photo shoots. And, you know, there's so many individuals that you put a camera in front of their face and they literally change who they are. They feel awkward. They're not authentic. It doesn't lend to the story well. But if you just have your phone recording and you're having a conversation with them, the passion of why they started the business or the passion of their products or how they help their customers. It just completely changes. And so that's just kind of on a very small scale of being able to, you know, capture some of that audio when people feel like they're their best selves. And I think podcasts are really a great opportunity for that. There's also a lot, you know, in many cases, it can be less production, easier barrier to entry. I don't think you start a podcast to be famous, but I think that you could start collecting your audio files to leverage across the channels on social. And I think that's really where people get stuck. They don't want to launch a podcast because it's, you know, it's a big undertaking maybe in their company or their organization, but they can still use and leverage audio in different ways and use their current social channels to kind of spread that through.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting way of putting that and why it might be a good fit. And, you know, anecdotally, again, I feel like this is, again, very anecdotal in nature, but I feel like I used to run into people, and I don't blog as much as I podcast, that would say, hey, I've read your blog. I've read what you're writing. Now I run into people that are listening to the podcast, and it is such a personal connection. I feel like they've spent, and vice versa. They say that they feel like they're spending that time, and I think that we can't overestimate that mental closeness that can deliver.
Yeah, it really is someone, you know, in your ear, which is a very kind of intimate space in many regards, because you hear their voice, you hear their emotion. And I just think it's an awesome way to be able to communicate, whether that's just a brainstorming session between you and another team member in your organization. How awesome would that be for the client to hear that? Sometimes as customers, we don't hear the behind the scenes. We don't get to see how much businesses care about their customers, regardless of the industry. And so I think that just letting people in a little bit to that space, audio lends itself well to that. It kind of still protects the things that you need confidentiality wise to protect in your organization. But it's a really great opportunity to just provide that transparency and trust.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
We talk about this human connection, and that makes me feel like an evil, cold, corporate, robotic thing, this human connection that people are talking so much about. But it's interesting, this dynamic with striving for this human connection in this digital world where we have all of these tools that make connection possible, but at the same time, if not leveraged correctly, can put an inordinate amount of distance between us or more than was there before. Where do you come down on the impact of AI, of chat bots that kind of run counter to what we were just talking about? Oh, it's really you responding versus, oh, it's a robot pretending to be you.
Yeah, we were actually having that conversation not long ago here in the office. And I think my favorite experience to using or leveraging a chatbot is not, like, I don't want it to pretend that it's a real person. Like, just tell me that it's like a cool robot, right? Like, hey, this is an automated process, and let me tell you how it's going to work. I can help you find these things very quickly. Should you need to talk to somebody, you know, kind of here's the opportunity. But the second you try to start tricking people, or like you feel like you don't really know if it's a person or if it's not a person, I think that's really where it feels a little bit more clunky or just like not fully developed yet. So I think AI is wonderful and I love it and I think we should lean into it. But like protect the processes that still make us unique and still make us real. And, you know, if we only have 5 messages to deal with a day, maybe we don't need an AI. Maybe we can just answer those messages in a very, you know, real way. Now, if you have 500,000, there may be some tools and software that you need to leverage with that.
Right.
But I would just protect the things that really are the person-to-person value. And then the ones that really don't add that, you know, go ahead, automate them away. Like, you know, FAQs or just like basic information. Like we don't need a real human to answer the questions. Like, what are your hours? That should be a pretty standard, like, you know,
right. What are
you,
your,
you could figure that out.
And I think, when you look at, if you're getting, like you said, the 5 a day to not, you know, maybe blindly just turning that switch on. But if it's 5,000, and if there's a big chunk of those that you can pick off with the, what are your hours? What's your bank's routing number? Some of these easy, very tactical questions that then allow you to separate those off and then serve the unique questions better than it is adding something. I also wonder if there's some form of transparency in there of acknowledging, because I think we both mentioned this idea of pretending. And I feel like I've seen some examples out there where something is acknowledging that it is a chatbot and can pass you off somewhere else once they learn a little bit more or expose you to these potentially easy answers that are right there as well.
Right. And I think the key to that is, and it seems so simple, but it's copywriting. People don't want to be like, don't ask the questions in a way that feels structured or templated or like, you know, a little personality in a copywriting AI could go a long ways. Especially if you're making people go through quite a few channels or funnels, to get what they need to go to. You know, humor will distract a long ways. But I think like just copying what is on a phone tree channel is again, not the right play because we all get annoyed by that. So why would we just keep doing it? You know, nobody wants to sit on a phone conversation and go through 25 different questions. You know, it just, it always feels annoying, at least for me. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks that.
I think that's really important, though. You talked about the importance of copywriting, because I think, we talk about some of these kind of staples in the marketing world. We're not talking about things that have just emerged out of the blue with new technology. We're talking about human connections and copywriting. And I think it's so easy to skip past these. And I sound like a broken record, and it sounds like trite. When I'm talking to college graduates entering the workforce, and you know what skills are most important. And this is again the trite part, but I feel like writing is so important, whether it is anything that we've talked about already on this show, whether it is structuring a podcast so you've got some sort of show flow and questions figured out. It's the chatbot side of that. Why do we just mirror what we see in, you know, the automated phone systems that everyone hates? We can be better than that, and good writing can, you know, lift things up substantially.
Right. Or even I always tell people, like, even just adding an emoji in your copy at times. I mean, don't go overdo it, but like a smiley face can definitely like go a long ways, or, you know, can add some like tongue in cheek humor, or it's the simple things that I think people overlook because they're trying to be so complicated or complex. And that really is, it's important. And I agree. Copy, like if I would give my kids one tip, it would be make sure that you can communicate in all forms, including writing. Like it's so important.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound, you know, way out there. Our oldest just went to college and is an English major, and it's you know, there's all kinds of, you know, the stressful hand-wringing parenting questions of what's he going to do with that? And I really am very cool, calm, and collected on it because. I think he's going to know how to write. And I think, granted, I am a biased sample because that's how I've... yeah, that was probably a key skill in the pathway that I ended up on. But there's a lot you can do. And I think even with these newer forms of tech, I think that's surprising to some people that they think that whether it's, you know, print media falling behind or other things like that, that they assume that the skill of writing is somehow vanishing with it. And I think it's more important than ever. And it's, like you said, it's one of those simple things that we miss in reaching for the next thing.
Yeah, I do think it is critical now. And I think it's the challenge that people have writing today is they do have to have that flexibility in their skill set. I mean, you have to be able to write extremely short form, like headlines only, if you're, you know, doing it for, like in our industry, social media. But I think that kind of crosses a lot of industries because that kind of really short, quippy copy is very different than, you know, a longer form, more in-depth, you know, company-wide email, right? Like, it's really, really important to be able to have those different ways to communicate. And I just can't imagine that going away ever, right? Because it's even with the kind of onset of all the short form stuff, there's still ways when and times when we have to communicate longer or depth or more deep topics that just need more words. So, well, definitely a skill set.
And that shorter writing is harder to boil down and sometimes requires more work or as much work as something longer. But I also think other forms of media that you think, okay, well, what about everything, all of the, you know, live video? And I think there's writing involved in that. It may not be writing the exact script, but it is plotting out the story of what you want to say. Because, you know, I know you probably have seen your share of live video as well, and I know they're not all created equally. You can tell who has some sort of a sticky note or a cheat sheet that they're working from that they know where they're going to go versus who just flipped it around and decided to talk for 15 minutes.
Right. There's very few people that can just kind of get on camera and be able to just be like, you know what, I'm going to nail this for the first time and all my thoughts are going to be clear and like, you know, it doesn't typically happen like that. I love it when people make it look that easy, but it's not really the reality.
Right. Well, and I think that that's one of the deceptive things about these newer, more off-the-cuff channels, whether it's live video, whether it's even a conversational podcast, is the perception that they have just hit record and started talking, that there's some prep that goes into this stuff as well.
Oh, for sure.
So what is one thing that you think, granted we've just been talking about one thing being writing, but what's one thing that you think as marketers look ahead, as where things are going, what's something that most are missing beyond writing that they should probably spend more time thinking about?
I think we touched on it a little bit, but I mean, the research has shown this, and I think it's so obvious, but so many businesses aren't doing this, is transparency and communicating that transparency. Like, how can you show people an insight into your business? You know, even with the rise of Amazon and we're buying things impulsively and we may not know where the supply or the supplier is coming from, there's also a lot of times when we may find something on Amazon, but we're going to go back and research that brand because we want to know what's in it. We want to know how it came about. We want to know the passion and the purpose behind the brand. So even though we may go back to Amazon and still check it out in our cart, the customers and consumers are craving that transparency into your organization. And it crosses from the B2B side to the product kind of consumer product side and across the board. So that's one thing I really think is not going to go away from a marketing standpoint. And then the other side and thing that I think is really important as marketers that we need to think about is, what are things that the customers want and not just things that we're excited about as marketers, right? Like, we may be really excited about VR, AI, or all of these things, but if not executed right, like, maybe customers don't really even care. And so I was reading a study, and it was kind of showing some of those gaps specifically on some tools. And I thought it was so interesting because live video is one of them. You know, there's so many bad live videos out of there that I don't really watch a lot as a customer. But as a marketer, I want to do a ton of live videos, right? Because it's exciting and I want to try something different and I want to really break the norm. So it's just, I think, important to acknowledge if there are those gaps, with whether it's within your certain industry or the type and scale of business that you're at, as well as, you know, maybe it's just going to take some adaptation time. And so we should just keep doing them until people catch on. Like, that still could be a strategy. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think acknowledging those and really trying to figure out, like, is this worth it? Is the customer getting equal amount of value that I'm putting into it for time? Because I think that, you know, there's so many tools in our toolboxes these days that really trying to narrow that down is going to be a challenge in the, you know, next few years.
Yeah, the narrow focus there, I think, is so key. And as this comes out, we've got a new year ahead and most are thinking about what to do. And I think that's a good reminder for folks listening that it's not always about all of these things that you can add. Some of it might be refining what you're already doing. Some of it might even be subtracting things that aren't adding to your business, to what your customers are looking for either. I think it's an easy trap for marketers, because as our nature, we look into all of the cool next things, and that might not be what our customers are actually looking for.
Yeah, I think, you know, we see this in social all the time, because people are kind of, you know, consuming the information on the news and maybe leveraging anecdotal conversations of young people leaving Facebook and all of, specifically with Facebook. But what's interesting is it still works really well for a lot of businesses, Facebook marketing, using Facebook to tell your story, and running ads on that platform. And I think people are so kind of paralyzed with the, I have to do the next, that they forget that, you know, if your Facebook is really working well and it's getting you results and it's converting and you have an audience built on there, like, yes, there are things you should be thinking about for the future, but not necessarily just jumping ship and going to a new platform. Like, that's not necessarily the best
case
scenario.
Yeah, and I think that in the V1 of all of this, it was, I have to be all of the places. And exactly like you said, if you've got a strong following on Facebook, which is not an easy thing in this day and age, harder than ever, then there's a chance that you could actually make things worse by diverting some of your attention and resources elsewhere.
Right, exactly. And the other thing is don't get in your own head. Again, I hear this a lot from people where they're like, well, Facebook is dying. Facebook's not a thing. And that's not what the data is really showing. Like, Facebook is still a thing. It's still a good thing to have in your marketing mix. And if it's working, don't just pull the plug and try something else, because you're going to lose a ton of momentum. And, you know, maybe a good idea would be to start the momentum on another channel if you're trying to, you know, plan for future opportunities. But I think just writing platforms off is kind of like just saying, well, I'm not going to email anybody internally anymore because, you know, none of my employees are reading my email. Like, not necessarily the right, like, solution for the problem.
Right, right. Well, Beth, as we talk about what brands can do that impacts their customers, and as we start to close, I have to ask you, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
You know, one that I'm really liking, and it's probably being targeted to me because I'm in the advertising space, but it's called promo.com. I think they do like stock photo videos, but they've had some really creative ads that are coming across the feeds of both Facebook and Instagram. And I just really like the creative that they're using because they kind of mock up a newsfeed and it kind of looks like the creative is crossing two different posts within the feed. I don't know if you've been served those ads as well, Nick, but it is a really interesting way to present creatively their services. And like I said, it just kind of makes you stop the scroll.
Yeah, if you talk about tactically what we're trying to do, it's a pretty good one. I have not, but we will include that in our show notes. Beth, where could folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so they can visit chatterkick.com is our website, and we have lots of social media channels. Our podcast is called Generation Social Media, and that's our Chatterkick podcast. And then the one that I do specifically with tech leaders across Iowa, we are just getting ready to launch another season of that, and that is called Technically Iowa. And then Beth at chatterkick.com is my email, and it's my assets and all of my digital channels are connected on our website.
Awesome. And we will link up to all of those in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Beth, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.
And if you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.